marching at the dawn of the day. All the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses.
Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Good afternoon. We are marching, yeah, through the drizzle on a February drizzle day in 2012. This is the Bread and Roses show on a Friday, and it will be rebroadcast on Monday. My name is Elliot Terry. I am your host today on today's edition of the Bread and Roses show on WXOJ LP 103.3 FM in Northampton, Valley Free Radio in the Pioneer Valley, also streaming live on valleyfreeradio.org and Valley Free Radio. Appreciate your support and appreciate your listening. We endeavor to edify, to educate, and to offer a diversity of views, independent media, and music from the Valley, locally produced and locally sourced music, as well as opinion and public affairs. And we do hope that you will support us with your donation. Just go to valleyfreeradio.org and click the donate. And the Bread and Roses show, for those who may not know, may just have found my voice and decided to listen. Bryn Rose's show has been part of Valley Free Radio for 5 or 6 years, from the beginning of Valley Free Radio. And we offer a vision of the world that is possible. Peace and justice issues with dialogues and interviews. Some of the nations and local leaders of movements, such as environmental movements and democracy, or food democracy, that's it, food democracy movement, the peaceful uprising movement, and Appalachia Rising, and of course the Occupy movement, and local peace and justice activists. And you can find shows from the past, Bread and Roses shows, on our blog, and I'm going to give you that blog information right now. Our Bread and Roses blog is http://www, just Bread and Roses Radio, Bread and Roses Radio dot WordPress dot com. Bread and Roses Radio dot WordPress dot com. If you're familiar with WordPress, you know how that sounds. So you can find some past shows from Bread and Roses show, and our different hosts. Let's see. Today is going to be a mix and match day. I have to admit, I'm not under the weather, but I'm a little bit subdued, so much like the weather. But it feels good to at least sense a little bit of winter before it exits, getting ready for spring. And it's going to be a bit of a business day today. I'm going to be featuring the thoughts and words of actually some white men, as some people would like to classify it. But we're going to hear from Chris Hedges on the Occupy Black Bloc critique and that controversy of violence and the black and the Occupy movement. And later we're going to hear from Dennis Kucinich and his Prayer for America that was he delivered in California 10 years ago this month. And maybe some rambling opinions from yours truly, Elliot Terry. Again, this is WXOJ LP 103.3 in Northampton, and as I get into the show, later on I'll be inviting some calls, if people want to call in. Telephone number is 413 585-1033. But to start out, I'm going to start out with some music just to elevate my mood.
Thank you.
All right. We just heard from Miriam Makeba from her album Reflections, and that song was the title song of a movie, Chica da Silva, which is the somewhat true story and mythic story of a Brazilian slave woman that would be queen back in the 17th century, I believe. Excellent movie, excellent song. You're listening to the Bread and Roses Show. My name is Elliot Terry. This is Valley Free Radio, WXOJ. LP in Northampton, 103.3 FM. And I'd just like to take care of a little business. There is an invitation to celebrate a week of action in commemoration of International Women's Day, March 2012, on Thursday, March 8th. There will be from 4 to 5 p.m. A march on the bridge. Women of the Pioneer Valley join women around the world for the fifth year to stand strong and simultaneously to build bridges of peace around the world at the Northampton Rail Bridge, Main and Pleasant Streets in downtown Northampton. Also, there is a prequel, Pray the Devil Back to Hell film at the Media Education Foundation on March 2nd. That's on 43 Masonic Street in Northampton. Pray the Devil Back to Hell. Free film and discussion sponsored by the Northampton Committee to End Wars. And also on Thursday, March 8th, in celebration of Women's Day, International Women's Day, the women will celebrate with Diane Wilson, fourth generation shrimper, the environmentalist who became nationally known for her work to call British Petroleum to justice after the 2010 Gulf oil spill. Author of Accidental Activist and co-founder of Code Pink at the Friends Meeting House at 43 Center Street, second floor in Northampton. That is some of the activities for International Women's Day. And so that takes care of some business. Now to the business of politics and Occupy. There was an event on January 28th of this year in Occupy. The Occupy Oakland protests turned violent with the help of a group called, which is being called Black Bloc. Those that wear black and black masks and hide their faces and do random acts of violence against property and, as it turns out, against some of the Occupy protesters as well, and against police. And with the predictable reaction of police violence and brutality and arrests. And in the wake of that Black Bloc action and in others that occurred in November of last year, which destroyed property, Chris Hedges, well-known journalist and now writing for Truth Dig, wrote an op-ed, Truth Dig, which is a online publication. And he wrote an op-ed, which he called The Cancer in Occupy. And he wrote that on February 6th. And you can go to Truth Dig and see that. And you can also then scroll down afterwards and see the comments where he's bashed by many anarchists and leftists alike, as well as those that just don't like him because he's a man and white. But I do support his opinion, and I am going to take this opportunity to read that piece from Truth Dig that that Chris Hedges had written in response. But first, I'm gonna say that I support the Occupy movement and have, and I took part in some of the demonstrations, and I've been a demonstrator and a protester since the late 1960s. I've taken part at that time in militant and violent demonstrations. I was very much in solidarity with the weather people at the time. I'm not a I am a peace advocate nonetheless, and this is the paradox of our state, as not only leftists but as humans. We want peace, but we live in a violent culture and we live in a violent time, and we are not perfect people. That's why we need to go to nonviolence training sessions that are such as the one happening this weekend. But all that said, the struggle within Occupy, the dialogue and the discussion going on as to whether or not they are nonviolent or whether to allow certain types of violence took place in general assemblies before they even started. They agreed, apparently, to be a nonviolent form of protest. But this group of anarchists were able to weasel in with the term diversity of tactics, which they kind of misrepresented. And as it turned out, the diversity of tactics is a violence and destruction of property and looting and randomness of rage, which is seems totally out of place, or at least out of context, because in the 60s, in the violence that occurred there, we were being shot down. We were being at Kent State. There was a history of escalation in the war in Vietnam and the war against the protesters. Occupy is new. It's not like protests are new, and the left isn't new, but it was a bright shining light that seemed to offer hope of bringing together coalitions of the masses and different groups. That doesn't seem to be what the Black Bloc has in mind, and it seems as though to me that it's the jihad, so to speak, which is the inner struggle inside between violence and nonviolence, really should err on the side of nonviolence, not only as a tactic but as a lifestyle, and for a movement to have that as their marquee and their flag towards as success. In order to achieve that, I believe what Chris Hedges believes, and I will read that, what the thoughts of Chris Hedges. The Black Bloc anarchists who have been active on the streets in Oakland and other cities are the cancer of the Occupy movement. The presence of Black Bloc anarchists, so named because they dress in black, obscure their faces, move as a unified mass, seek physical confrontations with police, and destroy property, is a gift from heaven to the security and surveillance state. The Occupy encampments in various cities were shut down precisely because they were nonviolent. They were shut down because the state realized the potential of their broad appeal, even to those within the systems of power. They were shut down because they articulated a truth about our economic and political system that cut across political and cultural lines. And they were shut down because they were places mothers and fathers with strollers felt safe. Black Bloc adherents detest those of us on the organized left and seek quite consciously to take away our tools of empowerment. They confuse acts of petty vandalism and repellent cynicism with revolution. The real enemies, they argue, are not the corporate capitalists, but their collaborators among the unions, workers' movements, radical intellectuals, environmental activists, and populist movements such as the Zapatistas. Any group that seeks to rebuild social structures, especially through nonviolent acts of civil disobedience rather than physically destroy, becomes, in the eyes of Black Bloc anarchists, the enemy. Black Bloc anarchists spend most of their fury not on the architects of the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, or globalism, but on those, such as the Zapatistas, who respond to the problem. It is a grotesque inversion of value systems. Because Black Bloc anarchists do not believe in organization, indeed oppose all organized movements, they ensure their own powerlessness. They can only be obstructionist. And they are primarily obstructionist to those who resist. John Zerzan, one of the principal ideologues of the Black Bloc movement in the United States, defended industrial society and its future. That's the Rambling Manifesto, according to Chris Hedges, by Theodore Kaczynski, known as the Unabomber. Although he did not endorse Kaczynski's bombings, Zerzan is a fierce critic of a long list of supposed sellouts, starting with Noam Chomsky. Black Bloc anarchists are an example of what Theodore Rosak, in the making of a counterculture, called the progressive adolescentation of the American left. In Zerzan's now defunct magazine, Green Anarchy, which survives as a website, he published an article by someone named Venomous Butterfly that excoriated the Zapatista Army for National Liberation. The essay declared that not only are the Zapatistas' aims not anarchist, they are not even revolutionary. It also denounced the indigenous movement for the nationalist language, for asserting the right of people to alter or modify their form of government, and for having goals of work, land, housing, healthcare, education, independence, freedom, democracy, justice, and peace. The movement, the article stated, was not worthy of support because it called for nothing concrete that could not be provided by capitalism. Of course, the article went on, the social struggles of exploited and oppressed people cannot be expected to conform to some abstract anarchist ideal. These struggles arise in particular situations sparked by specific events. The question of revolutionary solidarity in these struggles is, therefore, the question of how to intervene in a way that is fitting with one's aims, in a way that moves one's revolutionary anarchist project forward. Solidarity becomes the hijacking of or destruction of competing movements, which is exactly what the Black Bloc contingents are attempting to do with the Occupy movement. I'm reading right now from Chris Hedges' article on the Black Bloc violence. Black Bloc can say they are attacking cops, but what they are really doing is destroying the Occupy movement. The writer and environmental activist Derek Jensen told me when I reached him by phone in California. If their real target actually was the cops and not the Occupy movement, the Black Bloc would make others, their actions completely separate from Occupy, instead of effectively using these as human shields. Their attacks on cops are simply a means to an end, which is to destroy a movement that doesn't fit their ideological standard. I don't have a problem with escalating tactics to some sort of militant resistance as an appropriate morally, strategically, and tactically, Jensen continued. This is true if one is going to pick up a sign, a rock, or a gun. But you need to have thought it through. The Black Bloc spends much more of its time attempting to destroy movements than they do attacking those in power. They hate the left more than they hate capitalists. Their thinking is not only non-strategic, but actively opposed to strategy, said Jensen, author of several books, including The Culture of Make-Believe. They are unwilling to think critically about whether one is acting appropriately in the moment. I have no problem with someone violating boundaries when that violation is smart, appropriate thing to do. I have a huge problem with people violating boundaries for the sake of violating boundaries. It is a lot easier to pick up a rock and throw it through the nearest window than it is to organize, or at least figure out which window you want to throw the rock through if you're going to throw a rock. Groups of Black Bloc protesters, for example, smashed the windows of a locally owned coffee shop in November in Oakland and looted it. It was not, as Jensen points out, a strategic, moral, or tactical act. It was done for its own sake. Random acts of violence, looting, and vandalism are justified in the jargon of the movement as components of feral or spontaneous insurrection, quotes. These acts, the movement argues, can never be organized. Organization in the thinking of the movement implies hierarchy, which must always be opposed. There can be no restraints on feral or spontaneous acts of insurrection. Whoever gets hurt, gets hurt. Whatever gets destroyed, gets destroyed. There is a word for this. Criminal. The Black Bloc movement is infected with a deeply disturbing hyper-masculinity. This hyper-masculinity, I expect, is its primary appeal. It taps into the lust that lurks within us to destroy not only things but human beings. It offers the godlike power that comes with mob violence. Marching as an uniform mass, all dressed in black, to become part of an anonymous bloc, faces covered, temporarily overcome, comes alienation, feelings of inadequacy, powerlessness, and loneliness. It imparts to those in the mob a sense of comradeship. It permits an inchoate rage to be unleashed on any target. Pity, compassion, and tenderness are banished for the intoxication of power. It is the same sickness that fuels the swarms of police who pepper spray and beat peaceful demonstrators. It is the sickness of... I just lost my place there, sorry. But you're getting the idea. It is the sickness that fuels the swarms of police who pepper spray and beat peaceful demonstrators. It is the sickness of the soldiers in war. It turns human beings into beasts. Quote, "We run on," Eric Maria Remarque wrote in All Quiet on the Western Front. "Overwhelmed by this wave that bears us along, that fills us with ferocity, turns us into thugs, into murderers, into God only knows what devils. This wave that multiplies our strength with fear and madness and greed of life, seeking and fighting for nothing but our deliverance." The corporate state understands and welcomes the language of force. It can use the black bloc's confrontational tactics and destruction of property to justify draconian forms of control and frighten the wider population away from supporting the Occupy movement. Once the Occupy movement is painted as a flag-burning, rock-throwing, angry mob, we are finished. If we become isolated, we can be crushed. The arrest last week, this was in January, in Oakland, of more than 400 protesters, some of whom had thrown rocks, carried homemade shields, and rolled barricades, are an indication of the scale of escalating repression and a failure to remain a unified nonviolent opposition. Police pump tear gas, flashbang grenades, and less lethal rounds into the crowds. Once protesters were in jail, they were denied crucial medications, kept in overcrowded cells, and pushed around. A march in New York called in solidarity with the Oakland protest saw a few demonstrators imitate the black bloc tactics in Oakland, including throwing bottles at police and dumping garbage cans on the street. They chanted, they chanted some things that I can't repeat right here. "This is a struggle to win the hearts and minds of the wider public and those within the structures of power, including the police, who are possessed of a conscience. It is not a war. Nonviolent movements, on some level, embrace police brutality. The continuing attempt by the state to crush peaceful protesters who call for simple acts of justice delegitimizes the power elite. It prompts a passive population to respond. It brings some within the structures of power to our side and creates internal divisions that will lead to paralysis within the network of authority. Martin Luther King kept holding marches in Birmingham because he knew Public Safety Commissioner Bull Connor was a thug who would overreact. The black bloc's thought-terminating cliché of diversity of tactics in the end opens the way for hundreds of thousands of peaceful marchers to be discredited by a handful of hooligans. The state could not be happier. It is a safe bet that among black bloc groups in cities such as Oakland, agents provocateurs, spurring them on to more mayhem. But with or without police infiltration, the black bloc is serving the interests of the 1%. These anarchists represent no one but themselves. Those in Oakland, although most are white and many are not from the city, arrogantly dismiss Oakland's African-American leaders who, along with other local community organizers, should be determining the forms of resistance. The explosive rise of the Occupy Wall Street movement came when a few women trapped behind orange mesh netting were pepper sprayed by NYPD, Deputy Inspector Anthony Bologna. The violence and cruelty of the state were exposed, and the Occupy movement, through its steadfast refusal to respond to police provocation, resonated across the country. Losing this moral authority, this ability to show through nonviolent protest, the corruption and decadence of the corporate state would be crippling to the movement. It would reduce us to the moral degradation of our oppressors. And that is what our oppressors want. The black bloc movement bears the rigidity and dogmatism of all absolutism sects. Its adherents alone possess the truth. They alone understand. They alone arrogate the right. But they are enlightened and we are not, to dismiss and ignore competing points of view as infantile and irrelevant. They hear only their own voices. They hear only their own thoughts. They believe only their own clichés, and this makes them not only deeply intolerant, but stupid. Once you are hostile to organization and strategic thinking, the only thing that remains is lifestyle purity, Jensen said. Lifestyleism has supplanted organization in terms of a lot of mainstream environmental thinking. Instead of opposing the corporate state, lifestyleism maintains we should use less toilet paper and should compost. This attitude is ineffective. Once you give up on organizing or are hostile to it, all you are left with is hyperpurity that becomes rigid dogma. You attack people who, for example, use a telephone. This is true with vegans and questions of diet. It is also true with anti-car activists towards those who drive cars. It is the same with the anarchists. When I called the police after I received death threats, I became, to Black Bloc anarchists, a pig lover. If you live on Ogoni land and you see that Ken Sarawiwa is murdered for acts of nonviolent resistance, Jensen said, if you see that the land is still being trashed, then you might think about escalating. I don't have a problem with that, but we have to go through the process of trying to work with the system and getting screwed. It is only then that we get to move beyond it. We can't short-circuit the process. There is a maturation process we have to go through as individuals and as a movement. We can't say, hey, I'm going to throw a flower pot at a cop because it's fun. The thoughts of Chris Hedges on February 6th on the Black Bloc contingent. Chris Hedges spent nearly two decades as a foreign correspondent in Central America, and Middle East, Africa, and Balkans. He's reported on more than 50 countries and has worked for the Christian Science Monitor, the National Public Radio, Daily Morning News, New York Times. He has published several books, won Pulitzer Prizes, and he is worth listening to, in my opinion. So let's hear the opinion of the Beatles.
You say you want a revolution. Well, you know, we all want to change the world. You tell me that it's evolution. But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out? Don't you know it's gonna be alright? Alright. Alright. You say you got a real solution. The plan. You asked me for a contribution. Well, you know, we all doing what we can. But if you want money for people with minds that hate, all I can tell you is, brother, you have to wait. Don't you know it's gonna be all right, 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 all right,
all right, all right. That was the Beatles and their take on revolution, and I had just been reading from an article in an opinion piece by Chris Hedges in Truth Dig at truthdig.org. You can go there and join in the discussion about violence versus nonviolence as a tactic, as a movement within the Occupy movement. It is my I am of the opinion that if it is not summarily banned and discredited by the Occupy movement, the Occupy movement is finished. And apparently, the group Anonymous, the hacking resistance group, agrees with me. I'm going to play right now their response to the Black Bloc actions in January.
Greetings. We are Anonymous. The response from fellow Anons to Black Bloc has been overwhelming. Peacefully shutting down banks and locations has had a far greater economic impact than Black Bloc's pitiful acts of vandalism could ever dream of. They are not Anonymous, they are cancer. This issue has been discussed many times during the past several months, and there appears to be a popular consensus that your tactics of chilling and intimidating the citizen press, breaking the windows of small businesses, terrorizing innocent employees and bystanders, and sometimes outright assaulting Occupy protesters are unacceptable. You are at best misguided, harmful, and idiotic in your actions. But more than anything, it is your cowardice in hiding behind the banner of the Occupy movement, using Occupy protesters as shields, and attempting to pin your actions on Anonymous that will not be forgiven. We suspect that many of you are agent provocateurs. As for the rest, who behave in such a manner, your tactics demonize us in the eyes of the general public, robbing Occupy of much-needed support, both in finances and approval. And worse, your activities provide the illusion of justified police brutality, robbing Occupy of the moral high ground, and providing ammunition to the media. Consider this an act of diplomacy, before we start doxing your asses all over the internet, and paying special attention to personally ruining your lives. You have a choice: abandon your pathetic, ineffective, and counterproductive tactics, and join us, or step aside, or risk the wrath of Legion. If you harm Occupy, or attempt to pin your thuggish crimes on Anonymous, we will not forgive. If you travel like a gang and attempt to intimidate Occupy, we will get all up in your base, finding all your secrets, and wiping out your toots. We are Anonymous. We are Legion. We do not forgive. We do not forget.
All right. Expect us. That's pretty terrifying. That's Anonymous. The message on YouTube, Anonymous warning to the Black Bloc anarchists, who say they're not a movement, they are a tactic, and they're using tactics that have been used in the peace and justice movement. We encountered them there, and with the same result. And this is not just about Occupy, this is about the left, if there is one, and it's about where we go. What is our vision for America? What is our vision of a world we want to create? You are listening to The Bread and Roses Show on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP 103.3. My name is Elliot Terry, and we are streaming also on valleyfreeradio.org. I am going to play now the vision for America that was articulated by Congressman Dennis Kucinich 10 years ago this month at a Americans for Democratic Action meeting in California. So, without further ado, Dennis Kucinich.
Remarks today as a prayer for our country, as a celebration of our country, with love of democracy, with love of our country, with hope for our country, with a belief that the light of freedom cannot be extinguished as long as it is inside of us, with a belief that freedom rings resoundingly in a democracy each time we speak freely, with the understanding that freedom stirs the human heart and fear stills it, with the belief that a free people cannot walk in fear and faith at the same time, with the understanding that there is a deeper truth in the unity of the United States, that implicate in the union of our country is the union of all people everywhere, that all people are essentially one, that the world is interconnected not only on the material level of economics, trade, communication, and transportation, but interconnected through human consciousness, through the human heart, through the heart of the world, through the simply expressed impulse to be and to breathe free. I offer this prayer for America. Let us pray that our nation will remember that the unfolding of the promise of democracy in our nation paralleled the striving and accomplishment of civil rights. That is why we must challenge the rationale of the Patriot Act. We must ask, why should America put aside guarantees of constitutional justice? How can we justify, in effect, canceling the First Amendment and the right of free speech and the right to peacefully assemble? How can we justify, in effect, the canceling of the Fourth Amendment, probable cause, the prohibitions against unreasonable search and seizure? How can we justify, in effect, canceling the Fifth Amendment, nullifying due process, allowing for indefinite incarceration without a trial? How can we justify, in effect, canceling the Sixth Amendment, the right to a prompt and public trial? How can we justify, in effect, canceling the Eighth Amendment, which protects against cruel and unusual punishment? We cannot justify widespread wiretaps and internet surveillance without judicial supervision, let alone with it. We cannot justify secret searches without a warrant. We cannot justify giving the Attorney General the ability to designate domestic terror groups. We cannot justify giving the FBI total access to any type of data which may exist in any system anywhere, including medical and financial records. We cannot justify giving the CIA the ability to target people in this country for domestic intelligence and intelligence surveillance. We cannot justify a government which takes from the people our right to privacy and then assumes for its own operations a right to total secrecy. The Attorney General recently covered up a statue of Lady Justice showing her bosom, as if to underscore there is no danger of justice exposing herself in this administration. Let us pray, Oremus, that our nation's leaders will not be overcome by fear, because today there is great fear in the Capitol, and this must be understood before we can ask about the shortcomings of Congress in this current environment. The great fear began when we had to evacuate the Capitol on September 11th. It continued when we had to leave the Capitol again, when a bomb scare occurred, as members were pressing the CIA during a secret briefing. It continued when we abandoned Washington during the anthrax scare, when anthrax, possibly from a government lab, arrived in the mail. It continued when the Attorney General declared a nationwide terror alert and then brought the destructive Patriot Bill the next morning to the floor of the House of Representatives. It continued in the release of the Bin Laden tapes at the very same time the President was announcing our country would withdraw from the ABM Treaty. It remains present in the cordoning off of the Capitol. It is present in the camouflaged armed National Guardsmen who greet members of Congress each day we enter the Capitol campus. It is present in the labyrinth of concrete barriers through which we must pass each time we go to vote. The trappings of a state of siege trap us in a state of fear. Trapped in a state of fear, ill-equipped to deal with the patriot games, the mind games, the war games of an unelected president and his undisclosed vice president. Let us pray. Let us pray that our country will stop this war. To promote the common defense is one of the formational principles of America. Our Congress gave the president the ability to respond to the tragedy of September the 11th. We licensed the response to those who helped create the terror of September the 11th. But we, the people, And our elected representatives must reserve the right to measure the response, to proportion the response, to challenge the response, and to correct the response. Because we did not authorize the invasion of Iraq. We did not authorize the invasion of Iran. We did not authorize the invasion of North Korea. We did not authorize bombing civilians in Afghanistan. We did not authorize permanent detainees in Guantanamo Bay. We did not authorize the withdrawal from the Geneva Convention. We did not authorize military tribunals suspending due process and habeas corpus. We did not authorize assassination squads. We did not authorize the resurrection of COINTELPRO. We did not authorize the repeal of the Bill of Rights. We did not authorize the revocation of the Constitution. We did not authorize national identity cards. We did not authorize the eye of Big Brother to peer from cameras throughout our cities. We did not authorize an eye for an eye, nor did we ask the blood of innocent people who perished on September 11th be avenged with the blood of innocent villagers in Afghanistan. We did not authorize this administration to wage war anytime, anywhere, anyhow it pleases. We did not authorize war without end. We did not authorize a permanent war economy, yet we are upon the threshold of a permanent war economy. The President has requested a $45.6 billion increase in military spending. All defense-related programs will cost close to $400 billion. Consider that the Department of Defense has never passed an independent audit. Consider the Inspector General notified the Congress recently that the Pentagon cannot properly account for $1.2 trillion, that's trillion, in expenditures. It cannot account for $1.2 trillion in transactions. Consider that in recent years the Department of Defense cannot match $22 billion worth of expenditures to the items it purchased. Consider that it wrote off as lost billions of dollars worth of in-transit inventory and stored nearly $30 billion worth of spare parts it did not need. Yet the Pentagon budget grows with more monies for weapon systems to fight a Cold War which ended, weapon systems in search of new enemies to create new wars. This has nothing to do with fighting terror. This has everything to do with fueling a military-industrial machine with the treasure of our nation, risking the future of our nation, risking democracy itself, and the militarization of thought which follows militarization of the budget. Let us pray for our children. Our children deserve a world without end, not a war without end. Our children deserve a world free of the terror of hunger, free of the terror of poor health care, free of the terror of homelessness, free of the terror of ignorance, free of the terror of hopelessness, free of the terror of policies which are committed to a worldview which is not appropriate for the survival of democratic values, not appropriate for the survival of a free people, not appropriate for the survival of a nation, not appropriate for the survival of the world. Let us pray that we have the courage and the will as a people and as a nation to shore ourselves up, to reclaim from the ruins of September 11th our democratic traditions. Let us declare our love of democracy and declare our intent for peace. Let us work to make nonviolence an organizing principle in our own society. Let us recommit ourselves to the slow and painstaking work of statecraft, which sees peace, not war, as being inevitable. Let us work for a world where someday war becomes archaic. Let us work for a world where nuclear disarmament is an imperative. This is the vision which the proposal to create a Department of Peace envisions. 43 members of Congress are now co-sponsoring the legislation. Let us work for a world where America can lead the way in banning all nuclear weapons, not only from our land, our sea, and sky, but from outer space itself. This is the vision of H.R. 3616, a universe free of fear,
where we can look up at God's creation in the stars and imagine infinite wisdom, infinite peace, infinite possibilities, not infinite war, because we are taught that the kingdom will come on earth as it is in heaven. Let us pray. Pray that we have the courage to replace the images of death which haunt us, the layers of images of September 11th faded into images of patriotism, spliced into images of military mobilization, jump cut into images of our secular celebrations of the World Series, New Year's Eve, the Super Bowl, the Olympics, the strobic flashes which touch our deepest fears. Let us replace those images with the images of people working to rebuild their democratic institutions, with images of the work of human relations, of work reaching out to people, of helping citizens here at home, of lifting the plight of people everywhere. That is the America which has the ability to rally the support of the world. That is the America. That is the America which stands not in pursuit of an axis of evil, but which is itself the axis of hope and faith and peace and freedom. America, America, God shed grace on thee, and crown thy good with brotherhood and sisterhood. America, America, long may thy land be bright with freedom's holy light. America, America, let us pray for our country. Let us love our country. Let us defend our country, not only from the threats without, but from the threats within. America, America, crown thy good, not with weapons of mass destruction, not with invocations of an axis of evil, not through breaking international treaties, not through establishing America as king of a unipolar world, but of looking at America as a nation among nations and viewing the world as an interconnected whole. Crown thy good, America. Crown thy good with sisterhood and brotherhood, and crown thy good with compassion and restraint and forbearance and a commitment to peace and democracy here at home and in the world, and a commitment to economic democracy here at home and throughout the world. Crown thy good, America. Crown thy good, America. Crown thy good. Thank you. Thank you.
Dennis Kucinich. Congressman Dennis Kucinich. 10 years ago this month, delivering a speech to the Americans for Democratic Action in Southern California, called A Prayer for America. Just one more word about anarchists. My favorite anarchists are George W. Bush Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney. Militarism and war depends on anarchy. They are the chief anarchists in the world. With anarchy is military violence. Just something to consider. And consider this show done. This has been the Bread and Roses Show. Another Friday edition. We'll be rebroadcast on Monday. Or you can visit our blog, Valley Free. I'm sorry. You can visit Valley Free Radio at any time. At valleyfreeradio.org, but our blog is at breadandrosesradio.wordpress.com. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!
All touched by the radiance that the sun discloses.
Oh, hear the people singing, bread and roses.